For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
All right. It's a good day. It's a good day to have cleared to play because we've got a situation. And I think before we even bring Doc Feely on, we should let everybody hear a little bit about what Kyle Shanahan said on the conference call today.
That's a good idea.
Right? Because we're all looking for more information on how did we get here and where do we go from here. So, Kyle Shanahan, why was Christian inactive?
Just the same stuff that was bothering him all week. There was a little too much today. Game time decision. He came in, just talking to him about it. It was still there. Thought it was going to be smart to keep him out, and glad we did.
Okay, so that is from last night after the game. Conference call today. Update on CMC's calf.
Well, yes, I believe they're similar. I know it was a calf then, and it's a calf now. You guys could ask Christian more on that. Definitely, I believe if it was a playoff game, he would have played. But when it's not just the calf, it's the Achilles, and the Achilles is tendonitis, and that stuff comes and goes. And when it is acting up, something you got to be very careful about. Christian's very diligent about that stuff, and if it was a playoff game, he made it very clear to me he believed he could go. But when you hear that type of stuff and it's not a playoff game and it's week one, and especially when you're dealing with the lower extremities like that, it was a tough decision. But hearing all the words and stuff, in the long run, it made it easy.
Okay. Achilles tendonitis.
That's not good.
It's not good. And it's the first time we've heard that term, right? So let's dive into it. And we're excited not about the injury, but to have this definition about it. To the River Islands guest line, cleared to play, take you inside the tent, get you updated on the latest injuries in the Bay, and proud to partner with UCSF Health on this segment and bring in Dr. Brian Feely. Hey, Doc, how you doing? What's going on?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good. It's Victory Tuesday, but let's talk Achilles tendonitis. What does this mean for Christian McCaffrey and the Niners?
I really don't think it means all that much different than what we were thinking the week before if it was a calf strain. If you look at, I think the best comp for a backfield player for a calf strain was Joe Burrow last year. He was out for the entire preseason. He came out and he started slow. When you have a calf strain, that's kind of on the inside of your calf at the top part of your Achilles. When you have Achilles tendonitis, there's a whole spectrum of problems that can be. It can be very mild to you can't put weight on it. Based on how he's been practicing, this is probably more on the mild side, and they're being conservative on being able to keep him out, knowing that they have a good backup, and he's got an incredibly long season. And I don't think it's honestly all that controversial to say that Jordan Mason might have been told he was a starter and that McCaffrey was probably hoping he was going to play up until the last minute, and then the decision was made he's not going to start and he's not going to play just out of an abundance of caution.
And the abundance of caution does not necessarily indicate a severity of injury, right? Tendonitis does not necessarily portend to future traumatic injury.
No. In many ways, a calf strain is going to be just as bad, if not worse, than the Achilles tendonitis. It really just depends on the severity of the tendonitis. All it really means is there's inflammation along the tendon, which as a 28 to 30-year-old running back with a lot of mileage, it's kind of expected he's going to get that at some point during his career, if not this year, next year. So I don't think it's a big deal. He's going to get a lot of treatment for it. I think it's important for him to be able to limit his reps during the season. I think we've seen that in the last couple of years. He's somebody that does a great job at a certain number of reps. And then if we have a suitable backup, that's even better.
Doc Feely is with us. If he's been dealing with this since late in the regular season last year, why has it not gotten better? How does it get better?
Yeah, so the problem with any of the tendinopathies in the lower extremity, whether it's your quad tendonitis, patellar tendonitis, or Achilles tendonitis, is once it's there, it tends to just kind of linger, often up to 1 to 2 years. The reality is it does not seem to increase your risk of a traumatic injury. So it doesn't seem to increase the risk of getting an Achilles tendon rupture, which is really what you want to avoid. But it does make it annoying to play on. You cannot plant and push off quite as hard. You don't have quite the amount of explosive ability. The problem is there isn't a magic cure for it. It's not like you wear special shoes. There's no special injection. You essentially just have to do the stretching, the conditioning, and work your way through it. And if he's not feeling perfect, you hold him out.
And part of that feeling, does it get exacerbated or made worse when you have to play on an artificial surface as opposed to grass?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think we know, Dr. Pundy and I just published a paper that showed that the lower extremity injury rate is higher on turf than it is on grass. And if I'm playing on turf next week, early in the season, I'm probably going to be a little bit extra conservative because I think it is a little bit riskier and it hurts a little bit more. Grass is softer.
Doc, I wonder this. I think Bay Area sports fans are really triggered by this because of Kevin Durant. Are we talking about a similar situation where this is a precursor to something serious, or is it different?
So there's no proof that this is a precursor to something serious. So when you look at the literature, does Achilles tendonitis lead to an Achilles tendon rupture? There's no proof for that. The problem is in the literature, it means you're looking at the average normal person with Achilles tendonitis and Achilles tendinopathy. We're not talking about people that are 7 feet tall and jump for a living, or 6 foot one, 195 pounds, and run through a defensive line. So I think in general, we can assume that it's low risk that he's going to get a more serious injury, but we can't rule it out just because the demands on the professional athlete at this level are so much higher than what we typically understand for everyday people.
Doc, I don't want to ask you to speculate, but based on everything we're talking about, like what do you think the chances are that Christian McCaffrey, whether it's week two, week three, week four, whatever, when he gets going, what are the chances of him being a 25 touch per game player for the full season?
Well, by definition, he's no longer for the full season. But I think
for the rest of the season once he starts.
I think when you look at his usage rate last year, he was 18 to 22 touches a game, maybe up to 25. 28 carries for Jordan Mason was the most a Kyle Shanahan player has ever had in a game. So ideally, you have him in the 15 to 20, and I think that's totally reasonable. I think the other nice thing is as soon as you put him out there, even if he's not the first, second, or third option, he's a decoy because he's so good. So I think once he gets out there, he will play. I think the athletic training staff and the medical staff is doing everything right. You take it slow with him now, especially if you're going to win a couple games with his backup. It's a long season. It's hopefully another season that goes well into February. You want him fresh and you want him feeling as good as possible. And we know all these players don't feel 100% by the end of the year. So you want to conserve him as much as possible for the second half of the year and into the playoffs.
If you were sitting at a bar next to somebody who picked Christian McCaffrey number one overall in their fantasy league and they had a tear coming down their face, what would you say to them?
This is why I don't draft 49ers in my fantasy league. I hold them too close to my heart, man.
There you go. Well, there it is. They're there, buddy. Okay. Hey, Doc, thank you very much. That was very, very informative.
Yep. No problem, guys.
Talk to you soon. The proceeding was sponsored by UCSF Health. What do you think?
I think it was enlightening and educational, but it's also terrifying. And I'm glad he said that about it does not necessarily lead to an Achilles injury, a rupture, or a tearing of the Achilles tendon. Those things are not connected directly. However, the phrase Achilles tendonitis, and I know what tendonitis does and is, and it does linger. So it might be something that he has to manage and deal with throughout the course of the entire year.
It's already lingered.
Right.
And again, that part of what we're learning right now is that Christian has kind of been feeling this in some sort of a way since the end of the regular season last year.
Exactly.
Right. And they held him out of week 18, I guess. And then you got the bye, and he played very effectively through the playoffs, save the fumble in the Super Bowl. But even that, like, he played very effectively. He didn't seem to be slowed down. He does not play in the preseason. That doesn't really seem off anyway. He wouldn't have played a lot anyway. He practiced on the side, and now we sit here. And I think interesting for Doc to say, like, Achilles tendonitis sounds so much more serious and scary than calf strain.
Right.
And he essentially said, same thing. And in fact, calf strain is almost, to a doctor, a little bit more serious.
Depends on which part of the calf, but he did a good job of laying it out where it is down the side of the calf that connects down to the Achilles tendon. Sometimes you get the calf strain, which is up in the meaty part right below the knee, and that's a different issue and a different injury to deal with. But when you have the one at the bottom, and he said it so eloquently, that's cutting and pushing off. So you've got a change of direction position, and a guy who's an elite change of position, change of direction back in the pass game and in the run game, you really can't play him if he's compromised at all, because that's the beauty of what McCaffrey does.
510 just texted in, I drafted CMC with the first pick, but I don't have a tear on my face because I handcuffed him.
There you go.
Jordan Mason.
Smart. Our coworker who had CMC went for the attempted handcuff of Isaac Garendo.
Yeah, Garendo.
Didn't really work out for him.
You know it did not.
0.00.
That's right.
For Garendo.
How many carries? Garendo.
Totally. Kyle Shanahan showed you exactly what he thinks of the position, where you don't have CMC, so all right, Jordan, how about you get every carry, except the ones that Debo got.
It's what everyone with the last name Shanahan has always done with the running back position, right? If it's not Clinton Portis, it's going to be Mike Anderson. And if it's not Mike Anderson, it's going to be Terrell Davis.
How about Olandis Gary?
Then it's going to be Olandis Gary. And then it's going to be, right, Eli Mitchell or Raheem Mostert or Matt Breida or whatever. Like, that's what it's going to be. And yes, if you have the last name Shanahan, you are capable of getting production from a lot of different running backs. Fun fantasy story that has nothing to do with me. I know nobody cares about anybody else's fantasy team, but this was a little bit of a heart-stopping moment for a 10-year-old, okay? My son, in our family league, Christian McCaffrey, and he had the second pick in the draft.
Okay.
The reason the first pick in the draft didn't go that way is because that's my nephew, who's a diehard Rams fan.
I see.
And he refused to take Christian McCaffrey. So my son was like, awesome, I get Christian McCaffrey. Named his team Run CMC. Poor kid's got a ticket and a jersey on last night in the stands, finds out an hour before kick, down by 10 in his game.
Oh, that's awkward.
That McCaffrey, the only player left in their game, is out. So what do we do? You and I are sitting there talking on the air. I'm getting text messages from the boys because I'm the commissioner. He's like, you got to go in there and, like, you got to put Christian on IR and find someone. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Abe goes, give him Juszczyk and maybe we'll get lucky. My God, when he caught the ball down the left sideline and he falls at the 2.
Oh, geez.
If he goes in, he wins. And he fell at the 2, and I sat, I'm like, oh, my God.
And you weren't sitting with your kids, which is nice.
No. And he was playing my nephew, who took a different player with number 1 overall. They're playing each other.
Man.
That juice
ball. You can
ball.
Throw the records out when these cousins collide.
Oh, my God. And he ended up
And it comes down to Kyle Juszczyk.
And he lost by 4.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker.
Like, oh, my gosh. If he had gotten the end zone, that would have been the most fun fantasy story I could ever remember.
I'm glad I had it in the bank against Grandy, because I didn't have to really root for Garrett Wilson, you know, whatever he's going to do. I wanted the Niners to win, but I didn't have fantasy ramifications. I had already put Grandy night-night. I'd already put him to bed. Yeah, curfew came early for Grandy.
How'd that feel, Grandy?
And I'm going to gloat until I can't gloat anymore because I ate a lot of humble pie last year now.
You did. You want to know. You want to know over there.
No doubt.
Puka Nacua and T. Higgins played a combined like quarter and a half for me. So
yeah,
it was great.
It.
Wait, T. Higgins played? I thought he didn't play.
A combined quarter and a half.
Okay.
Puka Nacua played a quarter and a half, and T. Higgins didn't play.
But you didn't start him. You didn't start Higgins.
No, of course not.
Okay, well, then
but that's his big that's his big 1-2 punch.
Yeah, yeah.
And he missed me with both those jabs.
I know. So, like, violin for Grandy. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
You got the bad luck.
It enhanced my viewing experience because I got to sit next to Goo and live vicariously through his fantasy football Breece Hall roller coaster against you. So that was kind of fun. And Bonte is two seats away just cackling and guffawing.
Yeah,
and
not in the league. You know, just watching everybody sweat. Yeah, I mean, it does bring in pieces of the game that you don't care about. I had two leagues that came down to the Jets' last drive while they were down by 20-some-odd points.
Crazy.
But Breece Hall's out there, and I had another guy who had Aaron Rodgers, and when they brought Tyrod Taylor in, I'm like, that's a win. It's amazing. Guess who's on the line, Dibs? Guess who's on the line?
I'm not sure.
Aloha.
Oh, really?
He's flying to Maui, and he's still called. And I got to give nothing but respect for that.
Props.
You may be a Jets fan, but you flew to Maui, and at 1:19 in the afternoon, local time, Dollar Bill is on the line with Willie and Dibby. Dollar Bill, I give you mad respect. This is big of you.
Well, I had to call and defend my integrity. First of all, you guys were making fun of me yesterday. So before I even get started with my humble pie, I just want to say, I would never, ever call up, talk smack, and hang up on you guys. Never would I do that. That's not the way I roll. So either the call dropped or your producer dropped me, but that wouldn't never happen.
We'll blame the producers because that's what radio hosts do when things don't go right, Dollar Bill.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I have two things that I've learned in the last 24 hours. The first thing I learned is that Fro tastes a hell of a lot better when you wash it down with a Mai Tai.
That's fair.
Like
that's a flex
there. Dollar Bill, this will be fun. Dibs, would you rather be 1-0 and sitting right here or 0-1 and be in Maui?
Don't make me answer that. Well, the Niners are going to lose some games, give me 0-1 and a Mai Tai with Dollar Bill. Sorry, Niners.
So Dollar Bill, you won.
Yeah, you won.
That actually brings me to my second point, is that I would much rather be, like, I feel so much better this year at 0-1 than I ever did last year at 1-0.
The way I feel
is, we came in on the road. We lost. I'll be the first to admit, you guys beat us up and down the field on both sides of the ball. But we have the whole season to play more football. And last year at this time, we won on Monday night. And every Jet fan, frankly, anybody with two eyes knew our season was over. So I will happily go down 0-1. Props to you and all the faithful. And hopefully, 2 months down the road, I get a shot at a rematch.
Dollar Bill.
Hope is all I got, boys.
Much respect. Yeah, much respect. Aloha. Enjoy. And you're absolutely right, because you have a quarterback. I don't know if he's still great.
Yeah.
Hell of a lot better than what you were putting out there last
that
year.
That is for sure.
Hell, your backup is better than what you were putting out there last year.
And it's really hard to make judgments on the Niner O-line against what we thought was a good Jets defense. We'll see if other teams are able to do that to the Jets or not. And on the other side, the Niner D sure looked like they handled the Jets offense and Aaron Rodgers, but maybe this defense is just really, really good, and the Jets bounce back in week two.
Jets are at Tennessee this week.
Yeah.
At Tennessee.
Yeah, I like the Jets in a road bounce
probably
back. I'm not sold on Will Levis. I liked him in spots last year, but this year He had a couple of just terrible giveaways in that loss.
I don't think anybody is sold on Will Levis. I think that they thought with the coaching regime change that Tennessee was going to try to throw the ball more, and they put together a fancy receiving core with DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley. They didn't do a whole lot in this game against the Bears, and then Will Levis took a nice lead in the second half and absolutely you-know-what-ed it right down the side of his leg. I mean, it was absolutely...
That drive got Schmidt on.
It was an embarrassing performance, the way that that all sort of unfolded. And so, yeah, confidence is going to be low for Tennessee. But it's their home opener. And, you know, here's what I won't do today. And I don't know if I'm wrong, but I'm not going to look at this and go, okay, well, now the Jets stink. I'm seeing some people, oh, you beat a crappy Jet. Well, no, wait a minute. They weren't supposed to be a crappy team.
I think the Jets were probably the 13th or 14th best team in football coming in. They were probably a bottom of the schedule playoff team.
Based on odds? Where were the odds?
The odds for the Jets, I think they were minus 140 to make the playoffs.
Okay.
Which tells me that they were probably the 6th or 7th choice to make the playoffs out of the AFC. So if you wanted to look at the Jets before last night and you look at it and say, where do they rank in the AFC? You'd probably have them between 6 and 8 or 9. For me, that team going in, I thought that they probably were a 10-7 or a 9-8, above 500, but not good enough to win the division.
The New York Jets, and this is up to the minute, this is after going 0-1, remain the 11th pick in the NFL.
In the NFL.
In the NFL.
There you go.
And in the AFC, they are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seventh in the AFC.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
Tucked right behind the Dolphins. They're still behind the Cincinnati Bengals, who I would argue had a much worse opener than the New York Jets did. Obviously, Buffalo is up there. Houston is up there. Baltimore is up there. And then... right alongside the 49ers as the favorite, of course, is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah,
but that's where they sit up to the minute. The Green Bay Packers have moved well below the New York Jets in the Super Bowl odds, obviously because of their 0-1 start and now a current injury to their star quarterback.
Which is bad, and you hate to see it, and you don't want or wish that onto any team, but it's kind of where I thought that the Jets would fall, right in the 7th seed. They're a 7-8 seed. They're a team that's probably going to win 9 or 10 games, and if they win 10, they'll be a playoff team.
But 11th in the NFL in terms of Super Bowl odds, so like I think disingenuous to watch the 49ers play last night and go, oh, don't get excited, you beat a crap team. No, they didn't. I don't know how good the Jets are. I know that somehow they won 7 games last year without a quarterback. So... like now I'm supposed to believe that defense is not good? It was good all last year. It added players. Its head coach is the defensive coordinator. Like, you've got players on that side of the ball for the Jets. I saw a lot of sauce jerseys running around outside the stadium. I didn't much notice the sauce jersey inside the stadium. I didn't even notice him last night. I didn't even notice him. I didn't really notice much of anything on the Jets' defense.
Yeah,
they really were not, like, when you go, okay, how many plays did the Jets' defense make? Not many. Do you have any, like, tackles for loss, sacks, turnovers?
They had 3 sacks, yeah, but like, the 1 sack was when Brock basically fell down and took a 6-yard loss to set up a field goal. That counts as a sack for the Jets, but there weren't impactful sacks. There weren't really any impactful plays where there was a big hit. There was the 1 pass breakup on the throw to the tight end, the backup tight end, Salbert, which just resulted in an incomplete. It wasn't a pick. So I don't think the Jets' defense did much of anything. I was wondering how much time Sauce missed, and he played 63 of the 72 snaps.
Okay.
Because I know there was a little stretch where he got banged up and he was out for a series or two, but, you know, by and large, those big names you talk about, they are big names, and they are all pretty quiet.
They did not do much. Stroll through beautiful downtown Los Altos while enjoying a variety of local wines and live music at the Downtown Wine Stroll, Friday, September 20th, 6 p.m., sponsored by State Street Market and Madsen Fine Art Gallery. Tickets and info at downtownlosaltos.org. Okay, still around the corner, Grandy's Grades, and more of your phone calls. What'd you learn? What's your reaction to what you saw from the 49ers last night? 888-957-9570. Willard and Dibbs.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Second down, end zone. Now you can't make the catch. It was there, and Brandon Ayuk, in his first game since the big deal, could not haul it in.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, got to reboot that thing. We're going to do Grandy's Grades in just a little bit. That's Mark Grandy, who handles overtime along with Sterling Bennett and Kyle Madsen. Also handles, along with Kyle Madsen, the Football Hour, which is coming up in 90 minutes. And so those two and those three, great at breaking it all down after the fact. And because of that, Mark is going to put together his report card.
And I can't wait, because he, I would imagine, is a tough grader. He's not one of these, oh, you get an A and you get an A. And so I'm wondering how he's able to, not nitpick, but where he will find the flaws, slight though they may be, from last night's masterpiece of a win.
I haven't looked at the grades yet. All I know is that he texted us at one point and said one of the grades that he handed out, he now wants to downgrade it. And I'm like, what happened from 9 o'clock last night till now that made you like think less of whatever you... So that's coming up around the bend.
Okay.
You're right. Probably a tough grader. He's not like me, where I'm like telling the students on week one, just do your work and you're going to get a good grade. Just do your work.
Just do your work and you're going to get an A, well,
basically. The bar gets lower. It gets lower. I mean, everybody, you all know what I'm talking about. Like, that's how school is now. Like, forget, like, doing good work. They just were like, will you just show up? Will you just come to school? Will you just actually be here and do the things that we assign? If you do that, like, you're probably going to get like a C+ at worst.
At worst, yeah. Just do your work. Show up and do your work, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, come on. Like, we're over here taking attendance. So anyway, we're going to do that in just a few, but kind of want to reboot with some of the top thoughts from last night's victory. And yes, the overarching thing is, what a wonderful night. And I've called it a Valium game, because I think it just injected calm into everything that people were feeling about the 49ers after an uneasy offseason. Hold out, hold in, all of the things, Christian McCaffrey's calf, all of the things that everyone's been experiencing. And the McCaffrey thing is still obviously a huge story, but what a luxury. What a calming influence a game like that has. Like, now, actually, what do you think about this? Now that it's happened, aren't you, in a way, glad that it happened? Like, don't you like knowing what the 49ers potentially have when Jordan Mason is going to be a starting back? We've all thought maybe he could do that. Now we know.
We know. And I think if we all wanted to, you know, take a moment to step back and not be distracted by Kyle's perceived arrogance, you could have seen this coming a mile away. All you have to do, Mark, is look back at the history of 49er running backs underneath Kyle Shanahan, and you see Elijah Mitchell, and you see Tevin Coleman, you see Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert, Matt Breida. These are not household names. Now, Christian McCaffrey is the exception. He's going to the Hall of Fame, and they're darn lucky to have him. But when they don't have him, and you turn to Jordan Mason, as Guru would refer to him as a Jag, just a guy, well, he's more than just a guy in the Shanahan offense, and so he carries it 28 times. I don't believe he'd ever been on the field for more than 25 snaps in a game before, let alone get 28 totes. So, yes, it's a tip of the cap to Jordan Mason and the offensive line, but my big takeaway is what you have in a coach and a play caller, it's next level. Because they did this with just absolute ground and pound, going left, right, wide right, end arounds, jet sweeps. They did whatever they wanted in the ground game.
I tell you what, if you want to really feel excited about something, Niner fans, that's like deeper than your barroom talk, did you see how often last night the 49ers ran to the right side?
Exactly.
That's not what they usually do. They usually run it Trent. And so what that is telling you, and I know some people want to look at McKivitz and you've got questions and there were penalties, but Dominic Pooney over there at the right guard position, the lights came on. It's his first real NFL game Monday night, and a great camp and preseason was put to the test, and he passed with flying colors. If you take what the 49ers already had in terms of Shanahan's play calling, your pre-snap movement, Trent Williams as your left tackle, Christian McCaffrey as your back, and your ability to confuse defenses and have a quarterback that can do things accurately on time, and you add the ability now to run effectively, consistently, both directions, I'm going to shrug my shoulders as a defensive coordinator and go, I'm not really sure what it is we're supposed to do to slow this thing down. It is nearing impossible.
It's difficult, especially if you have a third-round pick at right guard who looks to be as athletic and as physical as he did last night, because when they ran his way, he was winning at the line of scrimmage. And how many times did you see J.P. Mason get to the second level untouched? You make it through the line of scrimmage. Nobody's hit you yet. Now you're 4 or 5 yards down, and the second level comes in and gets you, and you pick up 6 and 7 and, you know, even 5 if they were shutting the play down. The Niners' O-line had the Jets move in all kinds of ways, but mainly backward.
Yep, yep. Really, really effective on
that. And that was when they went to the backup guard, too. You had Spencer Burford come in because Banks had a little calf contusion. So even when you went to Burford, you still didn't miss a beat on offense.
Yeah, that's another thing, by the way. I'm glad you brought up health. You know, I know that there are always bruises and things like that we don't know about in any NFL game, but the 49ers, there's the McCaffrey situation, but the game that was actually played, I think they came out relatively healthy. Juwan Jennings had a hip drop tackle that wasn't called, by the way. I know that's going to take some time before people really get the view of what that is, but a hip drop tackle where he limped off at one point, but he returned. Debo had the one where he was flipped and upended, and he stayed on the sideline for a minute to kind of catch his wits.
Yep.
But he came back into the game, and so I think they came out relatively healthy from this one, at least as far as we can tell at this point.
Yeah, doesn't look like either of the injuries you mentioned are going to cost him a long period of time. Don't know if Jennings will be ready for week two. Hopefully it is a short week, and I'm just looking at the schedule now, off today, and then tomorrow they're at it. Thursday they practice, and then Friday, just a light little session before you fly out. So the short week definitely makes it tougher on guys who got, you know, banged up a little bit. But it does make you feel pretty good about Victory Tuesday, where you come in tomorrow and you got 3 days to ramp up for old Sammy D. It's Sam Darnold revenge game.
I got one other thing to throw out there before we go to Grandy's grades. And it's this. What did you make of Fred Warner saying that Nick Sorensen called a flawless game last night?
It's tough to refute it until, you know, I get a chance to really look at the film and the all 22. But in all seriousness, where was the defense lacking? And I do think that that's a little bit of a backhanded parting shot. It's a Roger Federer at, I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this.
And that's what I'm asking. And I hate to be radio guy here.
I'd have to look at last year and how many times Fred Warner even made a comment about the game plan, let alone a week one praising of the new guy.
Well, he was directly asked. He was directly asked, what did you think of Nick Sorensen's performance? And, you know, he went through a series of compliments before saying, I think he called a flawless game. And I don't want to put words in Fred Warner's mouth. I don't think he's taking a shot at Steve Wilks. I just think you got to translate that. Like, they certainly felt very, very comfortable. You talked about it yesterday. Complementary football. Is everybody working together? Are they all on the same page? I think everything that we talked about last year was never meant to be a shot at Steve Wilks. It was simply a fact that certain people were not all on the same page. It wasn't complimentary. They weren't feeling it. That doesn't mean he's a bad defensive coordinator. It just means it might not have been the right fit at the start, and they never really got there to where you really felt comfortable game in and game out. This is only one football game, but the fact that Fred Warner said it, he said it. He said it. Is the defense now suddenly, overnight, more comfortable because someone who's been within the Kyle Shanahan staff for a while is calling the defensive plays?
Could be. And could be that Nick Sorensen's just designing the defense the way Fred Warner prefers it, and it's a slight change from last year or not. And you go out there, and the results tell you everything you need to know. And the Jets went 7 yards, 2 yards, they scored the touchdown, and then it was 0-5 and -1. Those were your six first half possessions, and they got a total of 13 yards. Other than the touchdown drive, 13 yards, three punts, a fumble, and an end of the half. That is defensive dominance. Absolutely. And that's a guy who, obviously, he called a great game. Now, the one drive where they go 70 yards, just right down the field, a lot of Garrett Wilson, I think that was something that they tried, and then they didn't go back to it. They didn't play that soft again, and the Jets were unable to get through.
888-957-9570 is the number. The Niners are 1-0. This is Willard and Dibs, and we will do this the day after games throughout the coming season. And that is, once we see him play the next day, we got to go to Grandy's Grades.
All right. I put out a report card every night after, or every day if it's a day game. But last night, of course, on Monday Night Football, with 7 different categories: quarterback, skill positions, offensive line, front 7, secondary, special teams, and coaching. We'll start at the top with the quarterback. You guys might be upset at me, but I'm giving Brock Purdy a B+ for his performance last night. What do you think?
You upset at B+?
No, I like a B+ there. I mean, B+ is probably better than fine.
It's better than fine.
It's good. It's good with a slight up lilt in the voice. It's B+.
I'm not upset at B+ because I just think it's the nature of the way that game played. It's not a criticism of anything Brock did, and that's sort of where I stand. I don't think there was really a whole lot to pick at, unless you're one of these people that's like, every throw must be absolutely, like, he overthrew Juszczyk. If you want to question his decision on the throw to Saubert, that's fine. I don't think there was anything really to criticize. There also didn't happen to be anything where you were like, wow!
Exactly.
Except for the throw that Ayuk didn't catch. That was a wow throw.
It's a great throw.
That was a wow throw, and he didn't catch it. That'd be my question to you, Grandy. If Ayuk catches that, is your grade different?
No. That throw is still a plus for Brock Purdy.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not on him.
But
it affects his stats, yeah. But this is deeper than the box score.
Okay. All right. But yeah, B plus is very good.
Yeah, he's that guy in the group project who is cashing in from the work of other people around him. It's great.
B+ for Brock Purdy at quarterback.
Go to the restroom.
Up next, skill position. So this is wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends.
Okay.
I gave them a flat A, an A for the skill position.
Now I'm intrigued. So Brock Purdy gets a B+, but the people who dropped his passes in the end zone, I know this is a lot of people you're talking about, and Jordan Mason is one of them.
Yep.
He is fantastic. Deebo Samuel, yeoman's work, always willing to do these things. George Kittle had 4 catches, obviously also a big part of the blocking game. Juwan Jennings was the leading receiver. I get where you're coming from there. I mean, you got to give him like an A- though for a couple of Ayuk drops, though, don't you?
If it wasn't Ayuk, the group would get an A+.
Okay.
Ayuk's the only negative in this group, in my opinion. Even Juszczyk caught a couple of passes, as you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, he could have gotten two more yards, but anyway.
I got it as an A-minus just because of the Ayuk drops. And also, I don't believe in A-pluses. A is the best you can get. For me, there is no such thing as an A-plus, but we can philosophically get into that another time.
Maybe not for you.
I did think, well, you're in an era where everybody gets an A anyway. If Candy Soft, Windsor High.
You know, it's interesting,
born
though.
Born in 1997.
All right, can I challenge you for a second
challenge
on this?
Challenge away. You just talked about the bar being low.
No, but 100. What is 100% to you? Is that an A?
That's an A.
Then why is 95% also an A?
Because you get the range of 95 to 100,
you
much like in the
you
B's.
You don't on any other letter grade.
You get 85 to 88, and then 88 to 90, or 88 to 89 is a B+.
Right, so why wouldn't 98 to 100 be an A+?
Because the A+ is implied that it's more than 100%. And when you do GPA,
that's happening in your head.
You get a 4 point for an A. You don't get 4.3 for an A+. Anyway, I have him with an A- because of two drops from IU.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know why you can look beyond that, but go ahead.
That's fair. I mean,
I thought you were a tough grader.
A- versus A, not whatever.
All right. Yeah.
Offensive line up next. I gave them an A- for their performance last night.
Okay, why an A-?
A certain guy on the right side of the offensive line with a handful of penalties.
His name rhymes with Holton Wimivitz.
Yeah, does something
it?
Like that.
Yeah, something like it, sorta. Why? So okay.
A- is a good sturdy number. I like an A- grade for the O-line.
I would have downgraded the wide receivers and skill positions because there were a couple drops, and I'd upgrade the offensive line. I understand. Look, you're never going to have a game where there aren't penalties on the offensive line, or that might happen once a season. Somebody's going to false start. Somebody's going to hold. As you've said many times, you can call it on any play. If the quarterback doesn't get his uniform dirty and your running back who's never started before goes for a buck 47, like if there's any group I was most impressed with last night, it's the offensive line. I think you graded them too hard.
I will say, second half, they were better than an A-. It was a little ugly early, especially the first couple of the drives.
I mean, you want to know what stat I want? I don't know if you can find this, Grandy. How many NFL teams, 32 of them, how many of them started this week with a 3-and-out? I feel like it was 25 of 32 teams. It's unbelievable how hard it was for teams to come out and move the ball in their very first drive.
Yeah, both these teams, 3-and-out.
Sunday night football, same thing.
Yep.
Lions and Rams, boom, boom, 3-and-out. Everybody's punting right away. Niners punt, and then Wisnowski hit the showers. We're not going to see you for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
So that's not an excuse. It just, I'm with you. Yeah, a lot of teams looked better in the second half on offense than they did in the first.
Yeah, it was been an ugly offensive week for sure. Up next is the front seven on defense. This is the down lineman and the linebacking group. I gave that group in total a B+. I had a hard time with this one, but a B+ for the front seven.
Where's the drawback? Just the fact that you only
Malik
got one
Collins
sack?
Had a personal foul penalty. You only had one sack, and then Leonard Floyd offside and costing them a touchdown.
Okay. You gave him a B+. I think that's fair.
I mean, the grade. I like the teacher.
Yeah, like a quarter and a half into the game, I'm kind of doing the, where's the pass rush? Yeah. Like, I'm doing that. Like, a little stress early in the game. You're down 7-3. Then you go make it 7-6. They're moving the ball a little bit. And it felt uncomfortable. And then they got it. They figured it out. And then you're right. It was really good from there. Grandy, I think you nailed that one. You're going to get it. Yeah,
way to go, Grandy.
Hey, thanks for chiming in, Lucas.
Way to go, team.
Director of sports. That was good. Yep. Yeah. Okay, B+. We're
all
good.
Right. Up next is the secondary. So the quarterbacks and safeties. I gave the secondary an A- for their performance last night.
What's your thought there?
I think it was an A until the last garbage time drive, which wasn't great. I was also a little thrown off by the way that they responded to Leonard Floyd's offside penalty. It kind of felt like the whole defense gave up.
They stopped.
And they allowed Alan Lazard to just run down the middle unguarded. A- still, though, pretty good. The way that they limited Garrett Wilson to almost nothing aside from that first touchdown drive for the Jets was awesome. Good adjustments, I think, defensively for the secondary.
I give them an A-. I could see the A, but you rationalized the A- really well. The offside free play was an unfortunate one. And other than that, you had the one drive. And I miss me with the garbage time because they get the ball back with 4:20 to go and they're down by 19. And the majority of people had already headed for the exit. So I won't hold that necessarily against them. But they did a good job mixing up their coverages after that first quarter.
I'll say this, like you referenced that last, the Tyrod Taylor drive. Mm-hmm. I sort of throw that out. And to be honest with you, my feet were up so much, I didn't even really take note of who was in there.
It was the number one defense.
It was the number one guys. I know Bosa was still in there. I saw
Fred
that.
Fred Warner was still in there.
Yeah, I was kind of scratching my head.
Lenore and Mooney were still in there.
Yeah, I'm like, why are y'all in there?
I was the same way.
But at the same time, I also know that defense, sometimes it's difficult on defense when you don't have that full level motivation. Like the game was not in the balance anymore. The game was decided, and so you're kind of, I think it's easy to get back on your heels a little bit. But I got no problem with the grade. That all makes sense to me. You know, the other thing that that I did notice with, you know, I wanted to keep an eye on Yadam, because that was the question mark with who was going to be there. And correct me if I'm wrong, he was the one that got beat on the Tyrod Taylor touchdown, right? I think that was Yadam. And I, like, eyes on that one. Eyes on Yadam and Renardo Green and how that position is going to develop as the year kind of unfolds. I didn't think it was a phenomenal game. It was an okay game for Yadam. So we'll see. But yeah, I like your grade. I like your grade. What else you got?
I'll confirm who was defending that touchdown in a sec. But up next, we got special teams. Dibs will hate me for this one. I had to give out an A-plus to the special teams group last night. Six for six field goals. Didn't give up a big return on the other side. There's nothing to be upset about.
Dude, Jake Moody's going to win Special Teams Player of the Week.
Well, he should.
I'm pretty sure.
He's on pace to kick 102 field goals this year, which I looked it up. Would be a record.
Well, by the
you
way.
You know who holds the record right now, right?
For field goals in a season?
Field goals in a season. And the number's not as big as you think now.
Is it Gary Anderson?
David Akers.
Oh.
With 44 as a niner.
Oh.
Akers like a niner. Yeah, I believe 44 is the number, okay. So Moody off to a great start.
Yeah, real good start. Although, by the way, do they do special teams in both conferences, or is there only one player of the week?
Conferences.
It's both, yeah.
Okay,
one apiece.
Because what's his name with the Steelers? Their kicker's going to win. I mean, he kicked...
Boswell.
Yeah, he kicked six of them as well, and it was the only points they got, and they won the football game.
Yeah, that'll be the AFC rep.
Yeah, so those two guys are going to win that.
I'm not going to begrudge you for the A-plus all year. I mean, Wisnowski, one for one on spectacular punts. I do think... They controlled the kickoff really well. There was the one where Moody did the bump and run that I love.
Yep.
It hit in the field and then out of the end zone, so they only got it at the 20.
At the 20. The Jets got one of those on the Niners, too.
Yep. So I did like the way they kind of mixed it up with the kickoff, and Moody 8 for 8 on kicks. 20 points.
By the way, real quick, because people won't know that rule. Like, that kickoff rule, if it lands in between the goal line and the 20 and then scoots through, it's only the 20-yard line. If
Correct.
You just boot it all the way through, you go out to the 30. Everyone's still learning that.
Yes, and so strategically, if you can kick one that bounces at about the 7 and then careens into and through the end zone, you're in great spot. But it's risky, because if you hook that thing out of bounds, they get it at the 40.
At the 40.
All right, got to go quick here before we hit a quick break. Last one is coaching. This is not just Kyle Shanahan, but the whole coaching staff. I gave them an A for me. This was a lot about Nick Sorensen and defensive adjustments after that first touchdown drive for the Jets. Garrett Wilson did not do anything nearly the rest of the game. I liked the way they adjusted to the Jets beating them early.
But this is the one that you sort of regretted. Like later this morning,
I cannot agree with Kyle Shanahan's lack of aggressiveness in certain situations. End of the first half really bugged me, and then kicking the field goal 4th and 1 from the 5 bugged me as well.
You didn't like 4th and 1?
Absolutely.
See, I did.
And yet
2-touchdown game, kick a field goal, it's still a 2-touchdown game.
No, it's a 2-touchdown with 2 2-point conversion
game. That's a 2-score game.
It's a 2-score game, but it's a much, much harder 2-score game that I don't think is really realistic.
You know what's better than a 2-score game? A 3-score game.
Yeah, you know
what's getting
worse?
5 yards a carry all night long.
You know what's worse than a 16-point lead? It's a 13-point lead.
It's true.
Which you're risking.
They can get a yard.
I get, or maybe they wouldn't. But I hear you. I liked it.
I have a hard time being critical when a team scores 8 consecutive possessions.
Right.
I mean, touchdowns greater than field goals, I get that. I do like the A grade for coaching because, and I don't like to give out A-pluses, but his offensive game plan was an A++. That thing was a masterclass.
I just say it this way. How can you not give Kyle Shanahan an A with a game plan that does not include Christian McCaffrey, and then you still go out and score 30-plus points on opening night? That's good coaching. That's a good plan. That's a good contingency. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. What are your grades? You could pick any one of those groups and give them a grade. Argue with Grandy's grades. 888-957-9570. That's the number. It's Willard and Dibbs.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.